Good afternoon, folks. It's Friday, April 21st, and we're pleased you're joining us at 12:30. I'm Mirza Rahman with Joseph Burrell and Zaid Noursamar. And today, our team will be giving you the lowdown on our latest news, sports, and entertainment from East York, Toronto, and around the world. It's mostly cloudy with a high of 11 degrees in Toronto today. We'll head into the newsroom after a quick message from our sponsors.
Do you dream every day about being Tom Brady, the five-time Super Bowl champion, Steph Curry, the two-time NBA MVP, Bryce Harper, the face of Major League Baseball? Become great with just one thing. Wear the gear they wear. Rule yourself. Under Armour.
Time to listen up as we head into the news.
Thank you, Mirsal. It's 12:30, and starting off your breaking news is a big story to follow in Toronto today, as York Regional Police have announced they've arrested more than 100 men in connection with child trafficking rings. Many of the suspects reside outside of the GTA, but all have allegedly been involved with rings running within York Region. The department hosted a media briefing at 11 today. We'll continue to update you with information as it becomes available. Big news for the Ontario real estate market, as Premier Kathleen Wynne announced her plan to implement a 15% foreign buyer's tax and expand rent control laws province-wide. The new measures come as part of Wynne's latest 16-point agenda to cool housing and rental markets in the GTA. Similar regulations prove effective in slowing the market in Vancouver last year. And in international news, German authorities announced this morning that they've charged a man of German and Russian citizenship for the bombing of a bus belonging to the Dortmund soccer team. Police suspect that the man, who left a fake note near the bus claiming that Islamic extremists were responsible, carried out the attack to affect the team's stock prices. And that's all the news for me. Now over to Zaid with the latest in sports.
The Maple Leafs play the Capitals in Washington tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. This will be the fifth match in the playoff series in the Eastern Conference first round. Washington came back on Wednesday night to level the series at 2-2, winning 5-4. Torontonians might be pinning their hopes on the Leafs a bit more after last night's debacle in Milwaukee. The Raptors crashed to an embarrassing defeat against the Bucks in Game 3 of the NBA playoff series. The Milwaukee Bucks won 104-77 points. The Raptors began poorly, scoring just 12 points in the first quarter. It didn't get a lot better as the game went on. Star player DeMar DeRozan did not score a single field goal in the entire game. That was the first time he had failed to score since 2015. The Raptors now trail the series 2-1 with Game 4 on Saturday in Milwaukee. And that's all for sports. On to you, Marcel, for entertainment.
Thanks, Zaid, and hello to everyone. There are many movies to look forward to this summer. Some of our favorite characters are coming back with an all-new Transformers, Pirates of the Caribbean, Cars, and Planet of the Apes. Not only that, but the much-anticipated Wonder Woman and a sequel to The Guardian of the Galaxy will be coming up. It's the perfect summer for family movie nights and date nights. It's a bittersweet moment for Prince fans, as today is the anniversary of his death. He was found dead due to an accidental overdose at Paisley Park, the Minneapolis recording complex where he lived. Prince's former bandmates will perform. Paisley Park has been turned into a museum for fans that can't afford to attend the 4 days of events. There's a street party outside of First Avenue. The X-Files is coming up. They have been renewed for an 11th season after coming back last year after 12 years. The new season will include 10 episodes and will air sometime in the 2017-18 TV season. An air date has not been announced on Fox, but the production will begin in the summer. Stay with us because coming up, I sat down with psychologist April Benson about compulsive buying disorder. Next person in line, please.
Still serving breakfast?
Miss, we have breakfast all day at McDonald's.
What?
Girl, yes. We can hook you up with hotcakes, egg McMuffins, hash browns.
Awesome, but when did this start?
Just this year. More than 1,000 locations now serving all-day breakfast, so you don't have to rush. Hi again, I'm Rasal Rahman with Joseph Burrell and Zane Nursemar, and you're listening to News at Noon 30, live from the East York studios. First, we'll be talking about shopping addictions. Are you a compulsive buyer? There are over 18 million Americans that have compulsive buying disorder. I sat down with psychologist and author April Benson, who discusses the signs you could have a problem and could possibly need some more help.
So I know you offer, like, I'm reading online, several different types of programs to help people with compulsive buying disorder. Can you explain a little bit about the different programs you offer?
Sure. Stop the Shopping Insanity is three audios. Each audio is an interview that I did with a woman who was a compulsive buyer who wrote a book about her recovery. So that's what that program is. The text messaging program is a three-month program where people get targeted text messages between 2 and 5 times a day that help to remind them how and why they want to stop overshopping. They also can text the system 24/7 if they have an urge to buy or if they've already started to buy online or in a store, and we text them back immediately. They fill out a survey as they sign up for the program, and that survey dictates which text we send them. We send them the ones that we think are going to be the most helpful to them based on their individual shopping profile. Okay. And so when we do that, we also, so if they text 24/7, we text them back. And we try to help them get off that emotional ledge that they're on. And they text for help. We give them immediate help in the form of a targeted text or a link to a 1-minute audio that we created, which is designed to help talk them off that emotional ledge. And then 10 minutes later, we text them again. We ask if they still are having the impulse, or if they're still shopping, and depending upon what they say, we either send them a congratulatory text, or we send them one more attempt to talk them off the ledge. So those are two programs.
So which one of the programs do you think have you seen, like, the most successful, or maybe, like, the more popular choice?
Well, the program that's the entire program is 12 sessions. We either run that, we do telecoaching groups of 12 sessions where people go through the entire program. There's a lot of homework. It's, you know, it's a good deal of work and commitment. But if you do it, you know, you have a very high chance of success. So that's the one that's really like the gold standard.
Okay.
But not everybody, you know, has the time, energy, motivation, money to do that.
Okay. So I read an article from Healthline that the American Psychiatric Association does not consider, like, the compulsive buying disorder as, like, an actual disorder. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's one of the process addictions. And it's what's called a process addiction.
Okay.
It's an addiction to a process, like gambling.
Okay.
Rather than a substance. And they're just beginning to see how important these process addictions are, like internet addictions as well. So now at least the gambling is in there. And the gambling disorder is now recognized. So that's a good thing. So we're on the way.
Okay. So how many people do you think are affected by the compulsive buying disorder?
Well, the most, probably the best prevalence study we have was done in 2006 with a random sample of U.S. households, 2,500 U.S. households, and the prevalence figure for that was 5.8%. So that's like 18 million.
That was April Benson, who spoke to me discussing how more attention is needed regarding this disorder and about the importance of getting treatment for this problem. And next up is Zaid with his interview with John Chipman.
Next up, how do you deal with death in the family? The anguish and pain is difficult to overcome, but what if you were wrongfully accused of killing them? 20 parents suffered this horrendous fate in Canada in the 90s and early 2000s. All 20 cases had one commonality. Dr. Charles Smith, chief pathologist at the Ontario Pediatric Forensic Pathology Unit, was the man responsible for botching autopsies and forever ruining so many families. CBC journalist John Chipman takes an in-depth look at some of the cases in his latest book called Death in the Family. I recently spoke with the author. Here's part of the interview.
So I'll begin with Charles Smith, the doctor, who was Ontario's top pediatric forensic pathologist, mm-hmm. and he continues to botch autopsy after autopsy, falsely incriminating all these different parents without ever being seriously challenged. And this goes on for years. How does something like that happen? Can you kind of briefly explain that?
Well, I think you asked earlier about like what drew me to this story. I mean, Charles Smith drew me to this story too, because when you really think about it and you look at his career, I mean, Charles Smith is the type of person who we as a society hold up and lionize, right? I mean, there are people who hurt their children. There are people who kill their children. And we need people to hold those people to account, right? And Charles Smith, for all intents and purposes, we believe that's what he was doing for the first part of his career. You know, you go back into the mid-90s, and there were glowing reviews and glowing newspaper reports and profiles of him and the Ontario Coroner's, Chief Coroner's Office, about all the great and essential work that they were doing. Because we believe that they understood their role. And so I was really interested in that idea of, you know, Smith is the villain of the story, but he doesn't start out as the villain, right? Everyone believed for many, many years that he knew what he was doing and the work that he was doing was very, very important. And that notion of someone who we trust and believe to be doing essential work actually making the situation so much worse. You know, there's a lot of tension. You know, great storytelling is all about tension, right? And there's a lot of tension in that particular idea of someone who thinks they're doing a good thing and they're ultimately doing something really, really bad. You know, how it was able to happen? You know, there are a lot of vulnerabilities in the system, right? You know, all the work, all the autopsies that Charles Smith did, he did them for the chief coroner's office. The deputy chief coroner, they're not pathologists. So they don't have the training to look at the work that Charles Smith was doing and say, this is right or this is wrong. They trusted that he knew what he was doing. The reality is not a lot of people want to do autopsies on children, right? So he saw an opportunity to build a career for himself by doing work that there wasn't a lot of competition for. You know, and he rose up through sick kids, and he was able to become a person. You know, he had skills. He wasn't good in the autopsy room, but he was good in the courtroom. You know, and a lot of people got convicted, and the system, he didn't understand what his role was, and so the system looked at his ability to help get convictions of parents they thought were guilty as a good thing. They believed that what the findings and his opinions were medically sound, and he was able to deliver on those medically sound opinions. So he was judged. All the things, all his failings were initially held up as strengths.
So you mentioned that there were conflicting medical opinions, and that was one of the running themes throughout the book. It's like, how do you know what's right and what's factual and what's not? Because how can you even trust medical practitioners? And it's like I'm living in the Matrix over here. Like I just kind of, you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, forensic, it's not a science. It's an art. It really is. You know, they're medical opinions. And you got to believe that people understand what their role is, right? I mean, a medical pathologist, if he doesn't know the answer, or there are potentially other possible explanations for a situation, he supposed to say that, right? I mean, that was the big thing with Smith, is he was often, almost always categorical in his opinions, and incredibly dismissive of other people, right? I think that that was one of the biggest problems, is he was so overconfident that people believed that he knew more than, where other people were doing their job and qualifying their opinions, which was the right thing to do. I think in the eyes of the people that were watching, they felt that, well, Smith wasn't doing that, and so he must know better than everyone else.
FSCBC journalist John Chipman. Next up is Joseph, who recently covered a talk with CBC radio host Tom Power.
Thanks, Zaid. Now, I had the pleasure of covering an interview with CBC's Tom Power, hosted by our fellow journalism students. He sat down with us to tell us about his new gig and how he was promoted to the position.
Ah, but come again, they never will, for now I'm 64.
From a small anti-Confederation household in Newfoundland to Canada's most prolific radio talk show at a national broadcaster, Tom Power, the latest host of Q, spoke about his career and what it's taught him about his country in a recent interview at Centennial College. He started off by sharing with us how he first came to fall in love with the CBC as a child.
I didn't listen to the radio a lot, I'll tell you that much. I listened to a lot of records, you know, and I was a musician until I worked at the CBC. So I listened to a lot of records, I listened to a lot of music, and then in the car with my dad is where I'd listen to The Current and I'd listen to Sounds Like Canada.
Tom's parents were born in Newfoundland before it became a Canadian province. They didn't raise him to admire the country, but they did instill in him a love of music. Through that passion, he discovered legends like Leonard Cohen and Neil Young. Music taught Tom how to truly appreciate the country his family now belonged to.
So Sheila Rogers would be on, and if I was off school or for some reason in the summertime, I'd listen to it. And I just heard all these really incredible things about what was happening in Vancouver and what was happening in Montreal and what was happening. And Sheila was really good at doing places, really small places. You know,
okay.
Places like, well, especially a lot of places up north and places like Timmins. And I remember hearing stories about Moncton, and I remember hearing stories about Chicoutimi. And all of a sudden, through that one particular show, Sounds Like Canada, I found the country to be really captivating. And then I got into CBC Radio 3, after hearing all these bands from Vancouver and Said the Whale and Dan Mangan and all these different, and then this Toronto scene that started to happen, and all of a sudden I started to realize that it's very cool to, Canada is a really interesting place, and I think a lot of people in Canada feel the way I do.
On his own show, Tom draws from his experiences touring with his band, the Dardanelles. Praised for his relaxed, yet sincerely intrigued approach to interviewing, Tom says his own work on stage and in the studio is what gives him the confidence to chat with music icons.
Well, I think once they know, depending across the genre, like typically when I let people know that, when they figure out that I have also done the unglamorous stuff, like I have also driven from Toronto to Winnipeg in the dead of winter, which is like a 24-hour drive. You know, I have also eaten at the worst gas stations in the country. I have also dealt with bad, you know, monitor techs. I have also had gear that malfunctions on stage. And I have also struggled in a studio to make something.
For all of the fun that he has at Q, Tom didn't pretend that the job wasn't full of unique challenges. Admired by his coworkers for his quick-wittedness, he said the only reason he is able to think his way out of awkward conversations so effectively is because of his late father.
My father was extremely funny, and my father was very, very quick, and he always valued quickness and being able to think on your feet. I definitely got it from him as well, yeah.
Do you kind of look up to him as a role model when you're, after you took this gig?
My dad?
Yes.
Well, he died the week I got my old gig. I was the host of a Radio 2 show, the morning show before this, and I started that job. I started the job on a Monday, and my dad died on a Wednesday. But to I don't want to get too bummery here, but I think that I channel him in whenever I don't really know what to do, and I think of him an awful lot. I think he was an incredible dude.
One guest who did challenge Tom was another Canadian music legend, Katie Lang, who told him that although she did love singing, she hated being interviewed.
I really admire her. She's very aware of what she is. She's very outspoken about what she believes. And she has a great reverence for what she does. However, she doesn't suffer fools gladly. Because I said something like, what keeps you going after all these years, essentially? And she was like, singing. And I love that she said singing. I love that she just gets such a joy out of singing. And she said, I said, singing, and it seems to drive you, hey? And she said, yeah. She bring Thomas out. It's not this, man. She said, it's not this. I don't love this. I hate this, to be honest. I mean, you're great, but I don't like doing this. Don't give any pretense that this is a real conversation. I mean, you and I typically don't sit down and talk to one another with three people surrounded you with a bunch of people in a camera, you know? Like, you can only kind of do an impression of a conversation.
Right.
By acknowledging how disingenuous some interviews can be, Tom saved his interview with Lang. While he admits that some days at the office are tougher than others, ultimately he loves his new role at the CVC and was thankful for the opportunity to be the new voice of Q.
In no way is any of this work. Like, it's the most fun. Like, it's incredible. It's an incredible job I get to do. Like, I can't believe I get to do it.
So that was Tom Power, and I can't say enough just how enjoyable it was to watch him be interviewed. You get the sense that he really loves getting to know each of his guests, and whether he's talking to Gord Downey or the studio janitor or his own brother, he talks to everyone with the same level of respect. So a big thanks to our team of colleagues who spoke with him, and thank you, our listeners, for joining us on News at Noon 30. From our studio, thank you, and have a great weekend.